Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello, and welcome to Lore Watch, a roundtable freeform discussion about lore and the games of Blizzard Entertainment. I'm your host, Joe Perez, one of several lore-focused folks from Blizzard Watch, and I've got my stupendous co-host with me today, Matt Rossi. Today, we're going to be answering even more of your questions, because we have them, and I appreciate it. Thank you very much. If you do have questions for this podcast, you can be sure to send them into podcast@blizzardwatch.com, or one of our several channels in our Discord that we have set aside specifically for it. If you are a Patreon supporter, you have access to the Patreon podcast and Q supporter question channel, where we try to give our Patreon supporters just a little bit of priority over the other ones. And then we do have a general one if you can't support us on Patreon, so that you can still share with us anything that you want to have answered. So I think we're just going to get right on into it, unless Matt has any objections.
Nope.
All right. Greetings from Australia, Matt and Joe. Longtime listener, first-time questioner. This one's for Lore Watch. I'm writing you in an effort to spark a conversation regarding the seemingly odd history of the Highborn of Eldathar Loss. The Chandralar, in my opinion, there seems to be parts of their history that beg further development and or clarification. As the established lore states, Prince Torthelodrin, I'm going to pronounce a whole bunch of stuff wrong, folks, so I can already hear it in the comments, just bear with me, and company summoned the demon Imolathar to Eldathar Loss so the Highborn could feed off its magic. Being a demon, the nature of this magic would be demonic. Fel, no doubt. Now we know that feeding off of fel magic corrupts creatures over time, and we know precisely how it tends to corrupt night elves. My core question here is this. Why don't most of the population of Eldathar Loss show signs of fel corruption from their use of Imolthar's magic? It's stated that Torthelodon's insanity is linked to feeding off of Imolthar's magic. But why was he affected? Why was he the only he affected with the negative? Where are the Chandralar Highborn with glowing fel green eyes, for example? My guess is this. Some of the tomes of magical knowledge of the Chandralar keep the kept for Queen Ashara held information on how to avoid or at least drastically reduce the effects of fel corruption. If the ogres of the Gorian Empire can learn how to nullify the effects of different types of magic, including fel, from titanic artifacts, why can't the Highborn do the same? Azeroth has Titan facilities all over, and the Kildori Empire was quite large. I'm sure there would have come across a Titan relic or two, but that's my made-up explanation. All in all, something is missing. Did they find a way to refine the siphoning process? What are your thoughts? Thanks for the years of quality content. This is Aradus, roleplayer of Moonguard.
Well, Aradus, I hate to just jump in and say you're wrong, but you're wrong. Look at Imolthar. What is he? He's a big, two-headed dog with not one, but two one-eyed skulls, and then a bunch of tentacles with eye stalks coming off the top of them. He is classified in the game as a Void Terror, which, like a Void Walkers, is a demon that draws upon Void. And you'll notice that Torthelodrin didn't go fell. He didn't have anything fell about him. He just went insane, which is something that often happens when one taps into Void power. So the Chandralar weren't drawing upon fell. In the first place, they were drawing upon the Void, and that's why insanity and strange... You'll notice the pylons summon various kinds of arcane entities, not fel entities.
Mm-hmm.
There's no fel there, so they weren't fel corrupted because they weren't drawing upon fel, which is probably why they didn't draw the Legion's attention, and thus weren't just stomped into the ground when the Legion was invading back 10,000 years ago. Eldrathalos was ignored and avoided because it wasn't tapping into Fel in the first place. There are now, does this mean that Imulthar isn't a demon? That's kind of up in the air. He's considered a demon in the game so far, but so are, like I said, so are Voidwalkers. And Voidwalkers draw upon Fel. There's even a boss.
You mean Void?
Yeah, draw upon Void, sorry. There's even a boss in Hellfire Citadel who draws upon both Fel and Void as a result of Gul'dan's experimentation. So it's clear that these are hardly the first demons to draw upon Void. And for that matter, we've even seen there's other creatures who are considered demons who might, in fact, have allegiance to a different power source.
Yeah, I think, sort of jump in real quick, I think the term demon is just used to apply to extraplanar creatures, essentially, in Warcraft. That's what it feels like.
No, we've actually seen them specifically say, this is a creature from, you know, this is a Void monstrosity or what have you, and they're not considered demons. Sometimes they call them abominations, sometimes they call them something else. But there are specifically demons that we know tap Void. And in this case, the Void Terrors are absolutely that. The only Void Terror we had before the Burning Crusade was Imulthar. But in Burning Crusade, there were several Void Terrors in Azeroth, used in the Sunwell. We know that there's a bunch in Outland as well. There are, I'm trying to think of all the various Void Terrors we've got in-game. These are the named ones I can think of, besides Imulthar. There's Akuthar, who we saw in Cataclysm. There's Putrathar from Warlords of Draenor. I know there's more, but I can't remember them.
There's also the, isn't the
Yor,
guy?
Yor. Yeah. Yor from Shatra, from Shafar. He's a Void Hound. In fact, he's Nexus Prince Shafar's Void Hound.
Yep.
In the Monotombs. So I would be willing to bet you 10-1 that the Void Terrors or Void Hounds come from Koresh.
They might. They very well might. I mean, I think part of the reason that people see those particular hounds and associate them with the Legion specifically is because of, I think, I want to say really the first time we saw them outside of this was Sunwell.
The first time we saw them outside of this was in Nexus Prince Shafar's care in Monotombs, which was before Sunwell.
Fair.
But the thing is, I'm not saying they're not in the service of the Legion. I'm absolutely not saying that. I'm not saying they're, I'm even not saying they're not demons.
But they just don't cotton with the Fel energy.
And so if you're tapping their power, you're tapping the Void. And you even get, like here, when I went and looked up Yor, because I just remembered him, a gift from Illidan Stormrage to accompany Nexus Prince Shafar, Yor is a Void Hound of unlimited savagery and power. So I don't know where Illidan got him. So that blows my theory that they're originally from Koresh. But, you know, I don't know where Illidan got this thing, but he got one. It seems possible the Legion has, just like the Legion has Voidwalkers in its control, and we know Warlocks can draw upon them.
We also know that they are at least somewhat aligned with the old gods, because N'Zoth, in his vision of, you know, this wonderful world of the Black Empire to come, that's where Shadhar is, right? Like, he's in the gut of you know, or whatever he is, like in that one weird orifice in the N'Zoth thing. It's Shadhar the Insatiable.
Yeah, that's
and Nyalotha, right? So, like,
but he's—it's actually funny because he's listed as a Void Hound and aberration. As an aberration.
Yeah,
yeah. So that's interesting. But to answer your question, ultimately, the reason that they don't have—they don't need any explanation as to how they learn to draw upon Fel without getting Fel corrupted is that they don't draw upon Fel. Now, that now opens up a whole new question: how did they learn to draw upon Void energy without turning all tentacly? That's you know, we do know that Tortheldrin went crazy, but it seems very likely that they learned how to do that by not drawing upon it very much.
Unless there's natural, like, I don't want to say insulation, but I mean, this begs the question of Void Elves, right? So we know that Void Elves can tap into the Void and they don't get all tentacly. They can pull on the Void power. And we know that...
Well, yeah, but they have turned purple.
They have.
It's not like they're completely unaffected. If you accept that this is Void energy, how come the Shendralar still look like Night Elves and aren't like deep purple glowing-eyed Night Elves?
That is a good question, yes. So, like, and I'm wondering if, like, I guess that's one of those things that I don't know if we'll ever get a full explanation on. It could have something to do with sort of the stasis of the place, because the everything there always feels like it's in this, as you're moving through it, it's in this weird, like slow decay, if that makes sense. Like everything feels like it's slower, but it should have crumbled to the grounds eons ago, or turned into dust. And yet here you have these ancients that are still there, although they are, you know, slightly maddened, and they definitely feel some form of corruption from this thing there, because again, they're mad, they're angry. You have the twisted form of the one spirit of the ancient that you he's present for the original paladin and warlock quest, right? Like the warlock quest is turning that essentially that horse into a demonic mount, right? There's a whole lot of weird stuff that happens.
No, that's not the warlock quest is to go to get a mount from where the dreadsteeds come from. That horse is not getting turned into a demonic mount.
I thought the original quest was something to do.
I remember the bell and the stuff you had to do. I did the warlock quest for the warlock exactly once. I don't think you're right there, but I don't remember well enough to say exactly what happens. But I'm pretty sure that the dreadsteed you ride is an actual demon from Zoroth.
Well, there's the Felsteed and the dreadsteed. There's two, right? So there's I'm trying to think the I'm gonna have to look this.
No,
up.
No, the dreadsteed of Zoroth is the level 40 epic warlock ground mount, and it's absolutely. That's the one you did the quest for.
Felsteed is learned at level 20. Yeah.
Yeah. The Dreadsteed is the one, the quest one is the one from Zoroth. So you don't know. It's not, you don't turn the horse into your demon mount from Dire Maul. The Dire Maul quest is to go in and actually to use the room Imalthar's in.
Hmm.
You know, so, although you do, the Dreadsteed you get is Anathrazim's special mount. It's Lord Helnarath, the stable keeper's mount. That's what you get.
Hmm. Well, either way, I think going back to the original point I'm making is the area does not feel like it's untouched by the presence of constant void energy. It feels like there's always like a war of something. The spirits you come in contact with are maddened. They're not just like, and they still have their form too. Unlike other highborn ghosts we've seen throughout the world, they're not like the banshee-esque version of themselves. Some of them are, but like when you come across the hunter and her bear, they're just spectral undead versions of themselves, but they're still like angry and they're not friendly to you, despite the fact that like you could be, you know, maybe not, if you're going in as a horde, maybe I can understand that, but if you're coming in as like another elf player, like they don't recognize. So I understand there's the whole game mechanics thing, but it just feels like that area is always off. Right. It just
because I'm sorry to interrupt you, but you made me go look up Felsteeds. They're originally from Desolus.
Oh, okay then.
They were horses from Desolus that the Shadow Council decided they were going to turn fel because the Shadow Council are just that kind of guys. But this actually does come into what we were just talking about, because I don't know that I agree with you about what you're saying about Dire Maul, especially the wing in question.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's when you go in there and you talk to the ghost who gives the quest. To you know, finally get rid of Imalthar. They do talk about Imalthar's presence having warped the place and how it was Tor-Theldrin who forced them. I don't know if it comes off as like void corrupted as such.
But it feels
it feels more to me like what's going on in there is that they have rotted because
that's what I mean.
They've isolated themselves. Yeah, but it doesn't feel you're making it sound like it's the void doing it. I don't think it is.
I think what I was trying to get at is it feels like it's a warring of energies to me because we talk.
No,
about...
I think it's just time. I straight up think okay. They just isolated themselves for 10,000 years, and in all that time, they haven't had access to the bargain that the Night Elves made with the dragons. You know, to get mm-hmm. Nordrassil. No, it is Nordrassil. I keep confusing Nordrassil and Teldrassil in my head, but no, the Nordrassil bargain that gave the Night Elves functional immortality, that wasn't, the Shendralar weren't privy to that deal. They weren't there anymore. They had already isolated themselves in Dire Maul, what was then, you know, Eldrathalos. So I find myself wondering, I mean, what you're saying could be right, and it's something to consider. But I don't know if it's necessary to have that there.
And it might
the
not
sheer
be.
Fact is the fact that they've trapped Imalthar, I don't know. It is a fascinating thing to consider. What's been going on? How much void energy have they been taking in all these years? And we've allowed them to join the Alliance. The Alliance is now, if you think about it, the Alliance allowed the Void Elves to join too.
Yeah, they did.
The Alliance keeps letting elves who've been screwing around with the Void join.
Yeah, and that's why it's fascinating, right? Because like that, and that's why I like this question, because it's one of those things where it's like, we don't know a whole lot about it, and we're the ones that went to go do anything in this area. We're, as a player character, you are the one that has interacted the most with the people of this area, with these particular elves. You're the ones that have helped them. You're the ones that have cleared out the infestation of the satyrs. You're the one that have cleared out demonic influences, the ghosts, everything. You have the most knowledge of what happened there. And even then, looking back on it, you really don't know. Like, all you know is what you've been told to a certain point, but a lot of it, like you're saying, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And then the Alliance comes along. Yeah, sure. Come on in. What does that mean? What does that have the potential to cause problems with, especially with anything that might happen in the future? What could that, it's a fascinating thing, because I'd love to learn more about the time between them capturing this demon and us getting there to kill it and then kill the prince. Like, I'd love to know more about what their process was, how much they consumed, what it actually meant, if there was, you know, anything wrong with like the energies of the area. Because again, to me, it felt like a very almost night elfy place, not even a high elfy place at first when you start going through it. Like, it felt like this natural, it almost seemed like it was potentially in harmony with the world around it, with the ancients being there, the way that it's open to the area, the way that it's integrated with the area, which was very elfy for the time, too. Like, we see a lot of that in old architecture where things were just built into, you know, be harmonious with the land even before they were night elves, or truly separated night elves, high elves. It's just one of those things, like, I always wanted to learn more about that area, what it was originally intended for, we know what it turned into and what we're told it was supposed to be for, but is that accurate? What happened in the meantime? Can we ever go back and look at that library? I think you go back in Legion as a mage. Part of the Order Hall campaign, I think, sends you there, but even that's brief and it's not very quick, and you're literally going there to steal a book, if I remember correctly. Mages, correct me if I'm wrong, please let me know. I did the Legion Order Hall stuff not completely, because leveling was too quick, so it is entirely possible that I'm missing something there, but I remember going back there for a quest and it was very, very brief. So I don't know. It's a good question, and maybe it will bear fruit later. Maybe it'll be one of those threads that they pull on for future thought and consideration. All right, our next question. Hello, watchers. First off, I wanted to say thank you for what you do. Well, you're welcome. Keeping up with the lore via your podcast made me want to get back into the game, and I've been enjoying it thoroughly in playing through the lore I had heard about. I'm playing through the Hunter Order Hall questline on an alt, and Khadgar called the Houndmaster by the name Hakkar. Amarl Shade Warden also referred to the demon as Hakkar. Is this the same Hakkar as the trolls, just in a different form, or just two NPCs with the same name? Other random thoughts I've had. I was doing a quest down in Thousand Needles, and you kill a troll pirate who says he walked in on his wife, summoning the dead and doing more. I know this was probably just a throwaway joke, but I think that has interesting applications on the ways the dead can be manipulated by non-necromantic magic. I had been thinking about the plight of the dragons and the way their lines could be carried on. One thought I had was having kids with the other races of Azeroth. I feel like we've seen romantic interactions between some of the dragons and other characters, like Jaina and Caligos, and half races exist in the world, though I don't know if half dragons do canonically. What are your thoughts about this as an avenue for them to use? If it would be cool or not, and if it could lead to a new race playable by both sides, and if that would be cool. Thanks for all you do. This is from Titan Fuzz, a prot warrior on Velen. You want to give it a shot?
I don't want to talk about if dragons are having people.
Well, there's two other parts of the questions.
Also, the necromantic. First of all, I don't know why you're saying it was non-necromantic magic. Just because the troll pirate said they walked in on his wife summoning the dead and doing more doesn't mean she wasn't using necromancy, but I don't.
Like, because there's an aspect of shamanism that can call up ancestors in the dead, so it's entirely possible that they might have been doing something along
that. What makes you think you're not using necromancy to do that?
Because I don't want to believe it.
Oh, well, you are. You're a necromancer. Suck it. No, seriously. I don't know, man.
It's a lot of weird questions. Let's start with the first one.
The first one I can answer pretty easily because it's a known story. When they named the Hakkar in World of Warcraft, they simply forgot that there was a Hakkar in the Ancients novels. So they just said, okay, well, there's two of them, because they did, there was nothing else they could do at that point. They had just straight up forgot they'd already named a demon Hagar. So they're not the same character. They do have the same name. We don't know why. In-game, there is no lore reason for this. But yeah, Hagar the Houndmaster is a different being than Hagar. I mean, you know, there's more than one Matt in the world. I do meet other Matthews quite frequently, actually. used to do a podcast with one. So it does happen, and it's always kind of awkward. But in this case, yeah, that straight up, there's two Hagars. They're different people. We're going to see the troll Loa Hagar in Shadowlands.
Yes.
In the other side dungeon. So there will be some continuity there. But as for your other questions, the first one, I got none. I don't know about whether or not people are using other kinds of magic to summon dead people for sex. And I don't want to think about it. and on the dragon one, I just don't have any idea. I don't know. We know that there's other beings besides dragons that are part of the dragonflights. There's draconids, and you know, there's like the kind of centaurish dragonkin, and then there's the big walking dragonkin. Those are the draconids. I think they're basically based on, this is a thing I don't know if Joel will have an opinion on too, but I think they're basically based on Dragonlance.
Yeah, they are. They
are Draconians. Because they predate Dragonborn from D&D, but they don't predate the Draconians. So I'm pretty sure they're based on those guys.
I would absolutely agree with that. And it makes perfect sense, because one of the first people they ever asked to write some of the stories for the novels and novelization of the game was Richard Knack, who was very well known for his Dragonlance series. And I very distinctly remember them saying that Dragonlance in particular was an inspiration to them when they were starting to craft the World of Warcraft broader story. So that makes perfect sense to me.
But in terms of, if you can have a half dragon, I mean, they don't really, they used to have half dragons in D&D, but they don't anymore. They went with the dragonborn instead. I don't know if it's possible for a dragon and a human to have a child in World of Warcraft, or a dragon and anybody else, like an elf. The dragons do seem to like taking various forms. Like Chromie likes being a gnome, and various.
Rathian is a sexy human.
Is he? I never knew if he was human.
It seems like he doesn't have pointy ears, so I don't think he's an elf.
Oh, right. You can see his ears now. I keep thinking of him with the headdress on, but
he's got the hair down. Yeah.
There's just basically the dragons seem to take humanoid form for convenience's sake. It's like, you know, I have to go into that building and talk to all those tiny little people, and it's just better if I'm not, you know, a big old dragon taking up half the room. So I'll just go down and I'll take on this human form and go do it.
So there's a couple
like Ysera did and so forth. A lot of them do. But whether or not they're having children with humanoids, I don't know. They do have romantic interactions with some dragons, and some humans do get.
So I'm going to start with the Hagar thing, just real quick, my two cents. It's also entirely possible that they could retcon this later on or expand it out where Hagar is a title as much as a name, or it is a name that has a very specific meaning, and it was used unironically, but Matt is absolutely right that it's one of those things where in the early days of WoW, you didn't have somebody curating the lore of the game. You didn't have a team dedicated to cataloging everything and then reviewing quest text and dialogue and making sure that you weren't reusing the same name in different instances for different NPCs and confusing players. Like, that's a thing that's a relatively modern development of the game. So some of that is just going to be bleed over from that, but they could find a way to explain that away later if they really so choose to.
Like, the only reason I know is because Richard Knack straight up said, yeah, I went to Chris Metzen and said, what's the deal? And Chris Metzen said,
oops. I forgot. Yeah.
So that's how I know about that.
Yeah, as far as the Thousand Needle stuff, I think it was a throwaway joke. There's been several of those, and they were not always done in the best taste. But it is also possible that there are other magics that could bring back the dead or interact with the dead that aren't necessarily strictly like a necromancer reanimating the dead.
Here's my thing about this. I feel like we're confusing death magic, like specifically the kind of fundamental forces of the Warcraft cosmology, with necromancy.
Yeah, and maybe to a degree.
I feel like necromancy is simply, I use magic to do stuff with dead people. And if you raise the dead, you are doing necromancy. It doesn't matter how you're doing it. Am I using the holy light? Am I using, you know, shamanic magic? Whatever magic you're using, if you're pulling somebody out of death or even kind of halfway out of death, like when you're making a zombie or something. That's necromancy. I don't care.
I can hear the paladins out there cringing as they were saying that, but it's not. I can't find fault with the logic. I can't.
You are messing with a dead person. It's necromancy. I'm sorry.
The last question, though, I think is probably the most interesting to me personally, because this is something that I think would be really, really neat, is if they could use this as an explanation. We do know that ostensibly dragons, for whatever you want to call them, they were reforged by Titans in some capacity. They were charged up. They were messed with by Titans. Most of the races on Azeroth are Titan creations in some capacity, or can draw their lineage back there. Having interactions between the two would be rather fascinating if there is something that they could do with that, where they could canonically have half dragons. I was talking about this the other day with a couple players of D&D that are in some of my groups, where they asked, when do I think WoW will ever bring Dragonborn into, or a form of Dragonborn into the game? And I think that could be an interesting solution, because again, there's a wild card out there that we don't know anything about. We don't know anything about the Dragon Isles. We know that they keep referencing it, and they've been referencing it a lot more recently. We don't know what exists there. We don't know what societies exist there, if there is any. We don't know what we'll find when we eventually get there, which I do firmly believe that we will at some point get to the Dragon Isles. It's entirely possible that there is an intermingling of races there, where dragons have, any settled creations of the Titans that have lived there over all these years. Maybe there is some form of hybridization, but I think it would actually be kind of cool. And I like the idea of maybe having a new race, not necessarily a class, maybe an allied race or something that looks like a hybrid dragon. I think it would fit the lore of the world if they so choose to. They would just have to make it happen because it's open-ended enough that they could do that if they wanted. And I think players would enjoy it. I think it'd be really cool. Personally, I would love to have, a little half-dragon monk running around, breathing fire or punching things. It'd be cool. I think it'd be really neat. It's one of those things where they haven't said anything of it being possible, but they also haven't said it isn't possible. So this is one of those possibility things. If they wanted to do this, if Blizzard turned around and said, yeah, this would be cool, they could find a way to justify creating this in any way they so choose, because that door is still open. They haven't shut it off yet. All we know about dragons is they choose mates and that they lay eggs. We don't know if they're capable of interacting. And like Matt's pointed out, there's been several romantic relationships canonically with dragons and non-dragons. So what would happen if that comes from that union? And as you've pointed out, we know that there are specific half, I don't want to call them half-breeds because it's a real dirty word, but half-races of, elves and humans. We know that they can interact. We've seen that. We have twins running around of that nature. So why not other races? Why not other things that have been tinkered with by the Titans? So who knows? Maybe. I think that would be fun. Oh, that was a good long one. So let's go with this next one here. This one is from Bruce. This is for a long watch. It's a trio of short-ish questions, some of which may need longer answers. We'll do them one at a time and go from there. So the first one, how warm are Death Knights? Significantly cooler than living humanoids, I figure, but since they do breathe, it's in a bunch of quest text, even if we assume it's mostly so that they can speak, maybe somewhat warmer than room temperature?
Well, they are undead.
They are undead. We know that much.
For that matter, Forsaken breathe.
I thought Forsaken don't breathe, because that's the canonically they don't breathe anymore.
They don't. They breathe. It's enough that you can drown them.
They don't drown anymore.
They don't drown at all. You can just go underwater and walk forever.
Uh huh.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, they change it. I want to say Cataclysm. Canonically, they don't breathe unless they speak, I think.
Yeah, undead. I don't know if Death Knight actually drowned, to be honest. I've never tried to. But I mean, I have a Death Knight. I could log on and find out. At any rate, I think they probably are. I think what would really be the case is it depends on what they're doing. Like a Frost Death Knight would probably be significantly colder because they're channeling the power of cold.
I think blood would probably be significantly warmer.
Yeah, because they're draining blood into themselves and using it for power. And Plague, I don't know. Plague is like you're probably constantly going through a weird composting stage or whatever. but I do think that in general, they're probably a little warmer than I don't think they would be warmer than room temperature unless they're doing something that would make them be so. Like Joe's point about blood death knights, I think is valid. Like a blood DK is constantly calling up the power of blood, so while doing so, they'd probably be warmer than room temperature. But when they're not using their powers, I think they'd probably just be a corpse. In terms of the thing is they're complicated by the fact that they have the first off, it's complicated by the fact that we're talking about death knights as if you can do that, but you can't. There's the Acherus death knights that most players are, but there's other kinds of death knights. One comes to mind is the original death knights, who were orc souls jammed into dead human bodies using, you know, the magic that Gul'dan had learned from the Burning Legion, and thus probably from the, you know, he probably would have got that magic from the Nathrezim.
Probably.
Which might be important coming up in Shadowlands.
Likely.
Now, they used jeweled truncheons to house their souls. Their souls weren't in their bodies. Their souls were in jeweled truncheons they were carrying around.
Soul gems. They were in soul gems.
Yeah. So, but that is the case. They probably had nothing going on heat-wise, because their bodies were literally not even... They were just animating them from the jewels. They weren't even really there. Whereas Acherus Death Knights were animated by the power of the Lich King. And this has always made me wonder. At one point, Arthas was a Death Knight before he became the Lich King.
Yeah, but he hadn't really died, right?
That's my question. Yeah. Did he count as undead? I don't know the answer to that question. I don't know if he counted as undead. I don't know if he counted as undead at any point.
I don't think he did either. Like, now that I'm thinking about it, because, like, he never canonically died. Well, no, he didn't when he ripped his heart out at one point, didn't he?
Yeah, well, he ripped his heart out, but when he ripped his heart out, we found it, and it wasn't a heart.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't a physical beat. You know, it was a big chunk of black nothing. So,
or anima.
Was he dead at that point? I don't have an answer to this question. You can argue in both directions.
The other idea is that Death Knight is just a term, right? Like it could have a band, right? It could be like undead is a wide term. It can be applied as a very wide term.
Yeah, but the current Acherus Death Knights, the ones that people play. Yeah. Are animated corpses, but they're animated in a specific, special way. One of the things that keeps coming to mind is, I can't remember what it's called, but they have a thing where Death Knights apparently have to hurt people or kill people. If they don't do it, they start going into like withdrawal and it starts being agonizingly painful. So if that's the case, the magic that animates them might be very different than the magic used for other undead. It might
mimic
life more.
Maybe, because then the regular undead can mill about doing nothing.
They can just wander around. Whereas it's like, if you're a Death Knight, one of the reasons Death Knights don't do things like just hang out in capital cities and be friendly with everybody is that they literally have to go off and find conflict because they got to torture and kill things. You know, they must inflict suffering and pain. If you have to inflict suffering and pain and you don't constantly go find some place to go fight... You know?
Do you think that's a leftover thing? Like, okay, so I've been thinking about this a lot with Death Knights in general. Do we think that Death Knights originated from some of the idea, like, I don't want to say iconography, but some of the methodology of Maldraxxus? Do we think that that's a leftover of the drive that's instilled in all of the creatures of Maldraxxus to fight? Because that's one of the things that happens there a lot, where it's like you are driven to conflict even in times of peace. They have like the first thing you do when you're there. And again, mild spoilers, but this is. I don't really view this as too story specific, but like it's an arena battle between all of the houses, and that's a constant thing you find out. Do you think that maybe some of that magic originates from there? Because we know that some of the Death Knight stuff definitely does originate from there. Do you think that that has something to do with you? Do you think that's tapping into that animation magic the same way that they mold the anima of spirits that go to Maldraxxus to just have this constant urge to fight, but it's been twisted or corrupted or incomplete in such a way that now it's not just fighting, it's not just combat, it is that need to inflict pain instead. It's sort of that, you know, you need to torture, you need blood, you need to see something squirming because your original purpose of this magic that's being used to animate you has been so twisted. And the people that are doing it don't know that it's twisted from its original form. Because if you think about it, the ones that are doing the raising now aren't, you know, they're not from there. But it seems very similar to that. Do you think that might have some bearing on it?
I mean, it might, but I mean, the people in Maldraxxus don't have bodies.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, I'm often I go back to
I think, I mean, ultimately,
Forsaken saying that existence is pain type thing.
Yeah. But you're asking me this. You're asking me to have an opinion on, you know, is this thing that they just invented for this new expansion the reason for this thing that they invented several expansions ago? It could be, and maybe we'll find out that it is. We have not previously heard that. But we have not previously heard much of anything about Maldraxxus because it didn't exist until they came up with it for this expansion. They hadn't come up with a place like that. We do know that the Lich King, apparently all Lich Kings, had the ability to look forth into the Shadowlands. It's quite possible that Arthas spent that several-year period on top of his frozen throne as he was acclimating to becoming the Lich King. He might have looked into the Shadowlands and looked upon Maldraxxus. I mean, Maldraxxus has runecrafting.
Yeah.
And the Primus was extremely skilled at it.
And wasn't Arthas the only Death Knight until Wrath of the Lich King?
I mean, I don't know if he was the only Death Knight until Wrath of the Lich King. He was... I don't know if that's true. No, I don't have an answer to that question, because we know that Arthas was the primary Death Knight. He was the Death Knight of the Warcraft, you know, RTS games. Warcraft 3 specifically, all and its expansions. Obviously, there were the Death Knights of the previous generation.
Right.
And they still existed. They still existed. I mean, most of them were destroyed, but we found out, for instance, Terran Gorfiend was hanging out in Outland waiting to get a new body.
And you had the four riders of the Naxxramas, but they were created before, right? Or were they created the same magic?
No, we had Death Knights. If you're talking about the four riders of Naxxramas, the original Naxxramas ones, there was also Baron Rivendare.
Yeah.
Who was a Death Knight, and he was very much before Wrath of the Lich King. But he was obviously created after Warcraft 3. He was created after Arthas became Lich King. The Acherus, my God, we're talking a lot about this. We haven't even got on to his next question.
Yeah. Well, we got time.
Let's just say the thing to be said here is we cannot say for certain exactly what body temperature they are.
But they're warm enough not to freeze to death in, you know, and sub-zero.
They don't necessarily need to be warm enough not to freeze to death, because they're not going to freeze to death because they're not going to die because they're already dead.
Right, but so, I'm just saying, like, rigor mortis doesn't set in. They're probably slightly warmer than corpses.
But we don't know. That does not matter. Saying rigor mortis doesn't set in, so they're probably warmer than corpses, that means nothing. You shouldn't have said that. That doesn't matter. We can't judge their body temperature based on them not decomposing. They're not decomposing and not rotting and not getting a rigor mortis because of magic. We don't know what effect it has on their body temperature. We know that, for instance, frost decays can become extremely cold. Much colder than freezing temperature. I mean, all half of my abilities as a frost DK are pillar of frost, storm of ice. I mean, there's one where I literally just explode in a cold and it hits everything around me, howling blast. So I can't really answer the question, but I would assume they're probably not very warm. They're certainly not warm to the touch, I would imagine.
No, they probably are at least...
But there is that.
I wouldn't say you're going to snuggle them at night to try to keep warm.
There is that complication of, I think they do need to breathe.
Yeah.
They do actually, you can drown a Death Knight. How come? I mean, I don't know, but it might be related to that curse.
Yeah, and I think it has something to do with the difference in the magic between that and the magic that raises the Forsaken. But likely we're going to find out more about that as we move through Shadowlands. I would almost put money on that. The next question here from Bruce: playing through the various expansions via Chromie Time, I'm freshly reminded of how many really messed up worlds there are out there. Blighted wastelands like Argus, blown up shards like Outland, and Legion leftovers. If there's a way for a world to suck, WoW's got a place for it. Do we have a general sense of how rare healthy-ish worlds like Azeroth are? This is apart from the question about how much Azeroth of the last few decades is basically post-apocalyptic too. Short version, no. We don't really know. We know that there's like multitudes upon multitudes of potential planets out in the Twisting Nether. The Astromancer fight talks about that, right? At least
Whoa. Are we talking the Twisting Nether or the Great or the Void or the Great Dark Beyond?
The Great Dark Beyond. The two were used so interchangeably for so long that sometimes my brain still interchanges them. But basically the dark of the universe, right? So like we know that there's the potential, but we don't know anything about those planets. The only planets we really hear about are the ones that are jacked up. The ones we visit in the portal fight are demonically infested with various flavors of demons.
There's a few worlds we get to see when we do the Argus and demon invasions, where you can go through the portals into the other worlds the demons are invading. Some of those worlds look pretty okay, even though they've got demons invading them. They don't look messed up yet. Like, there's one that's basically forested. There's one that's like a swamp. It's not a fun swamp. It's a horrible swamp, but I mean, swamps aren't great. Nobody wants to go hang out in a swamp. Well, except for like the swamp thing,
obviously. Except for Shrek.
Yeah. Man, that'd be a weird meeting. The swamp thing meets the man thing. The man thing technically came out first. It was actually earlier. But this has nothing to do. But my point is just, there are some worlds that look to be okay-ish, but we don't know much about them. We know that the Legion went on a tear, and we don't know how bad the tear was. At one point, people were speculating there was nothing left in the universe, that Azeroth was the last inhabited world. I hope that's not the case. They've never said. It's not been stated one way or the other.
Yeah, and it's really hard to gauge just by Argus alone, too, because Argus was a whole special case in and of itself, right? Like, for lack of a better term, Argus could be considered one of possible many ground zero for this is the worst case scenario of what happens when a Titan engine is corrupted into a demon engine at such a large scale and what it does to a planet, right? Like, that's a whole different ball game. And we don't know, like Matt's pointing out, like, the Legion went on a tear throughout the universe. We don't know what that looked like. We don't know if they just corrupted the population, maybe folded them into the Legion and then said, okay, well, you know, now a recruiting planet, like 40K space marines, except chaosified or whatever the case is. But we don't know. And that's really, as far as I know, the only answer. And I mean, even when we were quote unquote healthy Azeroth wasn't healthy. Azeroth's never really been healthy. It started with the Titans plucking a gigantic voidy zit out of the side of the planet. And then, oh, well, that's bleeding.
There's a Lunar, which is Lunaria, which just seems to be somewhat unhuman corrupted.
Yeah, but we only see so few of it. So that's entirely, but you're right. We don't know much about that planet. It could be uncorrupted.
Well, there's lots of planets that we know were destructed. I mean, there's I can't remember. Xandros is destroyed. There's a lot of rift worlds, like the Telogris Rift. The Void Elves currently live there. That was a Void corrupted world. I went and looked up the ones that were attacked by the Invasion Portals world.
Mm-hmm.
There's Orinor, which is a world with blue grass and trees on floating islands with seemingly nothing but clouds below them. We don't know what's going on there, but it doesn't seem to be demon corrupted. The Bonich, I think, or Bonich, I'm just reading it. That one was the one with the pine trees that looks a little bit like Grizzly Hills, but with fog. But we don't know what's going on there. There's frogs there. There's frogs, netherrays, unicorns, and deer, according to the list. And the Legion went there to strip mine it, as far as we can tell. There's Sengar, which is the lava and molten rock world. I mean, that one was pretty much just a reuse of the Fireland skin.
But it could also be that that's just the natural state of the planet.
Yeah, but at any rate, it's mostly fire elementals. Don't know much about that one. There's that mushroom one.
That looked like the weirder version of Zangarmarsh, like the weird...
Yeah, Nagtau.
Yeah.
And then there's Sangua, the world with the bones and blood and stuff. The lake of blood being drained by the demons. It's like, yikes, I don't know what's going on with that one. And there's an ice one. Oh, hold on, I got a list here, and I keep finding... Val. Okay, Val. That one was the ice and rock planet. The Illidari assaulted it, which looks a little bit like Frostfire Ridge. Again, a lot of these things, they look the way they do because they were basically reuses of previous zones that Blizzard had described. But nevertheless, they exist.
Yeah.
And they were being attacked by the Legion, which means they weren't already corrupted or destroyed by the Legion. But there's a lot of other, there's a bunch of other worlds mentioned, but we don't know anything about them.
Yeah, and it's also entirely possible that we'll learn a little bit more about some of them in the future as well. One of the things...
Shadowlands, we know we're going to get at least one more gets mentioned.
Yeah.
Because the original Night Warrior is from a different world where Ilune is still being worshipped.
And then there's another one that gets mentioned from the one that is destroyed from in Ardenweald. One of the spirits that you interact with talks about the planet that they're from and that they can never go back home because the Legion destroyed their world. We know that there's several others, but one of the things that I've talked about a lot is that when you're in Orbos and you look up, you just see an endless sky full of gateways, and that has the infinite potential to maybe not necessarily just thousands of Shadowlands, but thousands of Shadowlands that link to other worlds, right? Like, the possibility at this point is endless for how many worlds could potentially be there. And because we have such vague ideas of what the Legion actually did with the universe and how big the universe is, we could wind up going to other planets. We could see other planets in the future. We now have access to technically transdimensional ships. Like, we could do a lot with, I mean, we could basically be Starfinder at some point. So who knows? But yeah, no idea. We have no idea how many healthy quote unquote worlds are out there or what that even means. Like the ones that, you know, Matt pointed out, those are healthy by their standards. Doesn't mean they're healthy for us to be there. So, and then the last question from Bruce here. The new appearance options have given me fresh thoughts for High Elf characters, drawing on my first encounters with the species back in vanilla Eastern Plaguelands questing. Have they led you to any, at last I can fulfill an old wish list entry, or, oh wow, brand new possibilities here, ideas for your characters, since I know you both like stories for them? So I think this is more, you're asking us if we've developed any other backstories for our elven characters that we play respectively, as far as in our canonical headspace. So what about you, Matt?
I mean, I don't really play on a high elf. So I mean, if you're just talking about the appearance options in general, the appearance options, I mean, obviously I use them on my night elf to basically say, you know, here's her burn scars. I wish I could give her more burn scars than I can. I wish I could actually give her scars on her body. But, you know, very much to make the point that, you know, this character has been through the burning of Tildrassil. She saw her people die. She saw her parents die. And that was something I wanted to enshrine in her character, that, you know, this happened, that the Horde destroyed her home. Even if it was a new home. I mean, you know, house isn't, getting your house burned down by your neighbor doesn't suck less because you only had the house for a few months. It's still horrible. So, yeah, that was what I did with that. With other characters, I mean, For my Lightforged, obviously nothing has changed because my Lightforged, they didn't get anything new. You know? But for my the dwarf, I've rolled. I never wanted to play a dwarf before, and now that they've added in stuff like the face tattoos and a lot of more different hairstyles and dark iron dwarves, I actually find them pretty interesting. So I'm playing, like, I have two dwarves I'm playing right now. One's a dark iron dwarf paladin, the other's a regular. I guess she'd be a Wildhammer because she has face tattoos.
Yeah.
So, but that's a high mountain warrior. And those, in that case, that I wanted to play a high mountain, but I never wanted to play any other dwarf. Not a high mountain, Wildhammer. Mm-hmm. High mountain dwarf. It's a Tauren, but it's 4 feet tall.
Oh, yeah, we could go with that.
It's literally, it'd be like a Highland, you know, the Highland cattle, the little short cows, like the ones with really shaggy. It'd be one of those, but a Tauren. Extremely short, extremely shaggy. But yeah, there's a lot of stuff I like about the options, and they have, I mean, I've used them for characters I've made. My, the paladin I just leveled, I did a lot of stuff. I changed her around significantly. For one thing, I changed her to a her because my Draenei paladin was a dude. And then I was like, I'm not enjoying it. So I made him a her. Whereas my Draenei warrior is still a dude, and I'm perfectly happy with him. But for some reason, as a paladin just wasn't working for me. So, oh, I've got my human male. I didn't add anything new for him. I just made him look real old because at last I could make him look real old. You know, you can grizzle him up hardcore now. You can make him look so old, and that's what I wanted. So I went.
So one of the things I did when we first got the high elven options for elves was take my hunter, who has been an elf since the dawn of time in this game, and make her appearance fit that, because back when I created my original night elf hunter, the canonical story in my head is that Abigail was one of the rangers from the Third War. There was a hero unit back then. In the Second War, there were rangers that you could call on when basically Warcraft 2 and Warcraft 3. They were units of longbow marksmen that were like the elite wilderness, wildland folks of the elves in those games. And so when World of Warcraft really first started kicking up, I never really felt that she was, you know, a night elf in true aspect. It was more she was that sort of last vestiges, one of those scarred warriors from the Second War that survived through the Third War and was now taken up into adventuring to try to, you know, put a pin in all these things that have started and been going on for all of this time, you know, and since basically the Great Sundering on, right? But I was never able to make her look like that part. I wasn't ever able to make her look like anything more than a pure Night Elf or a Blood Elf now. With the new options, I can get closer to that look for me. And it's not so much a aha moment where it opens up new possibilities. It's now I can actually make my character fit this story that I've had for them for 16 years now. So it was one of those cool moments where I can make the eyes match. I can make the skin tone match. I can, you know, the jewelry is a nice little option, but it doesn't really matter. But like, it feels more like it, like I can run around and feel like I'm actually that character, that I always wanted to be. Coincidentally, also the same type of character I played in the tabletop RPG when I did play, which was interesting because back then I think they were called Sentinels, not just Rangers. So always very interesting. But yeah, so for me, it was more I can just, some of the new appearances just let me fit the story that the character has always had to the actual appearance of the character. I don't think I've altered as far as that goes in my own little RP or headcanon as that happens. So she still rides a lightsaber because, well, or the quote therein, a panther of some type, just happens to be made out of onyx because you can't ride a lightsaber horde character, which is very, very sad.
No, it isn't. You don't deserve them.
All right, our last question.
Burned down the tree that many of them were on. I mean, come on.
Technically, this character did not because I never participated in the war campaign, and you can skip that now and just kind of move on with your life, which is exactly what she's doing.
Actually, you have to skip it. I don't think you can do Eldrassil stuff anymore.
Nope. So
honestly, this is a sidetrack, but it's something I wanted to say for a while. Lore-wise, I think that's a mistake.
Okay.
Here's why. You can play through the assault on Undercity, but you can't play through the Horde onslaught on Eldrassil. And that means that you never, people who are playing the game after the initial intro to Battle for Azeroth don't experience it. And they don't know the perspective from the Alliance side. And I think that's a mistake. Not that I don't think it's an enjoyable quest. I mean, it's really a gut punch, but I think it's a necessary gut punch. If you're going to actually understand, okay, this is how this started. This is the perspective of the people. I think if people played through it, they'd understand Tyrande a lot more. And we maybe have less people saying that she's, you know, unhinged and out of hand. You need to actually see what happened. You may just see Tyrande making the wrong decision. Tyrande,
But you could still see it. You could still experience it, which I agree. I think that's important.
And that's one of the reasons that I really hope. I feel the same way about the original Battle for Undercity. From Wrath, that the scenario's gone and people can't play through it, and thus they don't have the context anymore. I think stuff like that, we talk a lot about stuff getting removed from World of Warcraft. We usually talk about dungeons and raids and stuff, but this is stuff that's gone. You can't experience it. And as long as it is gone like that, you can't really, you know, it happened, you know, but it's very different to play through.
Yeah. No,
so
definitely.
I just wanted to throw that out there.
I agree. I definitely agree with that. Our last question comes from Ryan123. Greetings, Watchers. I was listening to your talks about what happens to the Demon Hunters after Illidan and his role in tormenting Sargeras, which got me thinking. Could the Titans have created a pocket in the Shadowlands to imprison Sargeras and then gave Illidan the role of his jailer? I'm sure it would have some pretty huge implications towards the first ones, the background of the Maw, and the role of the jailer, if that's where he was sent. Long-term listener, but haven't played WoW in about 5 years. It's you two and Anne that has kept me interested in WoW all these years. Keep up the good work. Maybe. We don't know if they could.
I think the way it was set up, it looked very much like it took the power of all of them put together just to get him to the seat of the Pantheon. Because when they originally fought him, he killed them.
Yeah, all of them.
Yeah, and he did it with, like, you know, a huge demon army and tons of fel, which the Titans aren't really great at dealing with. But nevertheless, they died, and they only just barely escaped because Norgannon yeeted their souls halfway across the universe. So I don't think they're at full power here.
And even then, you got to understand the seat of the Pantheon is itself a pocket dimension, right?
Like, yeah, I don't know where it is. I mean, but it is its own place. I mean, it seemed to have a physical location because they physically left it. Like, I don't know if it's a pocket dimension. It feels like
But we left it in a transdimensional ship.
No, we didn't. That ship's not transdimensional.
Mm.
That ship is not a dimensional ship. It is they created it to traverse the void. And I mean, the great dark beyond. And then they had to rip a portal open. They had to use the portal that Illidan ripped open. And then they had to fly through it again.
That's fair. So so maybe it does have a physical location. Who knows?
Yeah, but at any rate, wherever it is, the fact remains they barely seemed able to get him there. So it didn't feel like they're in a position to just punch holes into like the Shadowlands willy-nilly and do. We don't know, but the thing, we don't know the relationship between the Titans and the First Ones and the quote-unquote Pantheon of Death. We have no idea.
We don't know
how they're related.
Yeah, we don't know how the Titans could, if at all, affect the Shadowlands in any capacity, right? Like, if they could, why was the Emerald Dream created? Because that's there. We know that that's there. But if they could tap directly into Ardenweald, why wouldn't they have done that?
That's actually an interesting question because that asks the question, what's the difference between the purpose of the Emerald Dream and Ardenweald?
Yeah.
And it definitely feels like there is a difference. I don't feel like the Emerald Dream... My question has always been, did they create the Emerald Dream or not? Because it doesn't feel like they did anymore.
Yeah, like, we were originally told that the Emerald Dream was like this checkpoint for Azeroth, right? Like, that was the original story we were sold. I don't think that's accurate anymore. I don't think that the Titans created it. The more that we're finding out, I think they've figured out how to tap into it, maybe.
My argument would be that it is a checkpoint for Azeroth, but that's not... It wasn't created to be that. It was purposed to be that.
Right, yeah, exactly. It was a resource that was turned to it, but it may not have been its original intent, right? So, like, because I've been thinking about that a lot lately, too, is how can that Ardenweald in the Emerald Dream be connected as well as closely as they are, because we know that there is a connection there. And then, you know, how did that punch through to Azeroth? What happened there? Is that something that, like you said, it was purposed for it? Maybe it wasn't created for it. Maybe the Titans can't create dimensions. That's another thing. Like, because when we find Aenar, going back to something that we talked about originally, she's on another planet. She's not in another dimension, right?
Well, here's the thing, though. That's an interesting question, because it does feel like they can outpocket dimensions. Or at least that lore exists, because that's exactly...
Well, they can tunnel through, right? Like, that we know.
Not just tunnel through. We know... Because I can't remember her blood name. Helya helped Rodin make the elemental planes. Now, were the elemental planes just out pockets of our reality that they just basically built little pocket dimensions?
Which,
if they can do that, if they can make a pocket dimension, that still means they can make a dimension. It's just not a very big one.
Yeah, and it's not too far removed, because we know that those planes crash into ours at you know, certain points, right? Like, there's a ways that they are connected. So,
and for that matter, I mean, the very fact that Helya had that knowledge means that that might be why she's so valuable to the Jailer. And in fact, that could be what the Shadowlands are, but on a bigger scale because of the First Ones. We don't know. This is all stuff we don't know.
Yeah, the other thing I've been thinking about, too, is like the term created can also be interpreted a little bit loosely as well, because we can talk about creating these dimensions, but what if they were just repurposed? What if they existed in some capacity and were just repurposed? Like, going back to the elemental planes... And I'm not saying this is the case, I'm just throwing this out there as a possibility, is what if they already existed in some form, because that is just a natural order of being, but...
It doesn't seem to be the case based on other worlds with elementals. If you look at, for instance, the original Draenor, the elementals just were there on that world.
But what
I mean... They weren't in another dimension, and they don't go to another dimension. They live on Draenor. Now, you're not... I understand you're saying there might have been a dimension there, and they just jammed the elementals into it. That's possible.
Kind of, because we've seen that there are other planets or other things that exist that exhibit a lot of those traits. You brought a bunch of those planets up earlier. It's also entirely there's a lot we don't know, and we're going to find out a lot about how some of this stuff works in the future. I mean, especially with dealing with Helya and how that deal all that works. But like, if the Titans could do it, why did they need Helya? Like, I think there's something.
That's an interesting question, because. That's to my mind, that's kind of a faulty question, because the Titans didn't necessarily need Helya to do anything. Titans weren't here anymore. They created the Titan Forge to serve what they wanted to have done on Azeroth without them having to be there to do it.
But they were there with the ordering of the elementals, right?
No, they weren't. They were not. They beat the elementals using the Titanforged. The Titans themselves, the only interaction the Titans themselves had during that war was when Amon-Thul decided to stick his fingers in and rip Yashraj out by himself because the Titanforged couldn't pull it off. And when he did that, he created all sorts of havoc, and they're like, oh, that doesn't work. Oh, we definitely need to not get involved. And that's the Titanforge were used. It was a matter of scale. The Titanforge were used to do everything there because the Titans themselves were just too much.
Right, but my
question was before they got killed. But it's definitely not a question saying if the Titans could do it themselves, what do they need Helya for? They made Helya. They, you know, she got the information from them. It's like saying if I can use a chainsaw to cut down a tree, what do I need an axe for?
But I guess my question
is, I have an axe.
Yeah, but I get the part that gets me is like, yeah, I understand that particular point to it, but it's like if they could create the dimension and just have her create the gateway to funnel them into it, it seems like something that they would have done, because like relinquishing control doesn't seem like a very big Titan thing.
Oh no, absolutely it does. No, here's the thing. Again, you're acting like if she did it, that means they couldn't do it. No,
I'm not saying that they couldn't. I'm just saying, why didn't they? That's the question.
Because they created this entire purpose of the reshaping of Azeroth. They used the Titanforge to do it, much in the same way a doctor today would use microscopic tools to perform surgery instead of just jamming his hands in the chest cavity.
Right, but I'm saying
doesn't
like
mean
a lot
they
of the...
can't jam their hands in the chest cavity. They absolutely can, but they're not going to unless they absolutely have to.
But my purpose, my statement goes by the idea of like everything that we hear about what the Titans are doing throughout the universe, even as they're traveling, even when they're like at the peak of their power. They're not creating anything. They're reordering what already exists, right? Like that's the part that gets me is like,
yeah, but they're still doing it. Here's the thing again, when they're quote unquote ordering the universe, they're doing it through proxies. Now creating the elemental planes doesn't necessarily, here's the thing. We're talking about the elemental planes as a dimension, but that doesn't mean that that's what they are.
Exactly.
But it still doesn't mean the Titans don't have the power to do it. And the Shadowlands themselves are beginning to feel an awful lot like pretty similar to the elemental planes in that they are out pockets into someplace else.
Yeah, I guess that's really where I'm trying to get with this, right? It's just like there's a lot of stuff here that I don't want to say it's starting to contradict it, but it's like almost like the lights are starting to turn on and starting to shed different view angles on a lot of the stuff that we've been told and this, a lot of the story that's existed for years. And I'm very interested to see where it goes because everything has very interesting implications.
You know what the implication that I haven't heard anyone talk about yet, but I keep thinking about?
What's that?
Titans made the Titanforged because the Titans were too colossal to really interact with Azeroth, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we've heard when we go to Alduar, not Alduar. When we go to Alderaan, not Alduar. I'm going to point this out again. When we go to Alderaan and we interact with the Discs of Morgana, which were supposedly the uncorrupted discs that Tyr stole to get them away from Loken before he could do anything to them, we hear in Alderaan that the Titans have done this before on other worlds, and that it's unique, actually, that they made the servitors they made on Azeroth draw upon stone and earth for their construction. Often they just use flesh things. Which is a pretty interesting thing to think about. Now think about this. If the first ones existed and were creating portals and doing so forth, is it possible the Titans exist because the first ones are too colossal?
I've been thinking about
with
that
our
too.
Universe?
Yeah. Like
and so beings like the Pantheon of Death
were created
to interact on a proper scale, and thus the Titans themselves are just that in our reality?
Yeah, it's the most recent thing for those of you that are out there that I could say is like an example of it. It's like that episode of Rick and Morty with the going down a level, going down a level, going down a level, and all these like micro universes that are created to, one was to power his car, then was to generate the power of the car, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's not a new concept. It's been around in sci-fi for a very long time. But I've been thinking about that too. Where does the scale stop? Does the scale stop? Because it feels like we talk about in tabletop RPGs like scale creep a lot, and it feels like we're starting to sort of get an idea. Because remember when we first started playing World of Warcraft all those years ago, the concept of the Titans was essentially like this god level thing. It was this extreme being that we could never really fathom, and that sort of scaled down over the years. Like they're still massive, and you know the stuff that not to change any of the things that have been said about them or the actions that they've taken, they're still taking massive things, and their scale is still pretty immense. But they're not as big as they used to be, if that makes sense. They're not the untouchable colossi in concept that they once were. We literally hang out with them at some point. Like it's one of those things. Like we interact with them, and they're big, but they're not that big. And yes, they're diminished. Blah blah blah. Whatever. But then that order of magnitude higher that the first ones are, and is there something a magnitude order of higher than the first one? It's an interesting thought. Like I'm fascinated by how big this is actually going to get, and how encompassing it's going to be, and what that means for the future. Anything else that you want to add on that one?
Well, I don't agree with what you just said about the Titans, that they've shrunk down or diminished. I think it's just that we know more. It's more like a question of mystery. They're presented as unknowable because we just didn't know anything about them. Now we know more about them, and thus, in a way, that diminishes them because it diminishes the mystery, but it doesn't actually change them.
That's what it's I mean. I wasn't saying that they. I'm not saying that they're actually changed.
The way you phrased it, it sounded like that. So I wanted to make sure people understand that it's not that they've gotten any smaller.
It's the scope.
If anything, we now know they were way bigger than we thought they were. We thought the Titans actually came to Azeroth and walked around on it, and then we found out no, because they're as big as Azeroth, and they would have it'd be like standing on someone's back to do a shiatsu massage or something. It's not how that would work. But at the same time, yeah, we do know more about them. We've spoken to them. Whereas in the past, they were unknowable beings that you couldn't talk to.
And I find
that. Yeah, absolutely. That's right there. And that's interesting. When we talk about the first ones, we know nothing about the first ones right now.
And it's interesting though, too, because like we know about like the Pantheon of Death, at least the leaders of the four shadow planes that we go to, Shadowlands planes that we go to, we interact with.
And the Arbiter. And
the Arbiter.
But, jailer himself.
But we interact with several of them. And that's interesting enough itself. Yeah.
Yeah. It is much the same in that their mystery is lessened by the fact that you can talk to them. And that's absolutely the truth. But the first ones we know nothing about. So they kind of step into that role of unknowable beings who've had an effect on the cosmos, but we can't really say what that effect is. So yeah, there's absolutely.
Yeah. Our perspectives and everything is going to change as this expansion moves on, and I think we all just need to be prepared for it, because, and I've said this before, we are in wild new territory where a lot of this stuff, it's all brand new, and they can do whatever they want with it, and I'm sort of excited by that, because we're not as restricted to things that are held in place by old, you know, lore, old stories anymore. We're starting to get into a brave new world of lore for the game, and I'm kind of here for it. But Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/blizzardwatch. Your continued support means this podcast site and community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, a better chance at having your question answered on our podcast or the queue, and an ads-free site experience. And again, if you have questions for this podcast or the other podcast, be sure to send them into podcast@blizzardwatch.com. You can go ahead and send them into our Discord channels. We do have two of them there, whichever one you have access to, go ahead and put it in there. And be sure to check us out on Spotify. Give us a listen. Tell people about it. Share it. It's easier than ever to listen to all of our backlog of everything we've ever done. And you should do it because it's fun. But that's all we have for this episode. And we'll see you next week.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.